Hey everyone, welcome to The Lost Republican. Today we're going to be looking at the Bill of Rights. What you may not know, everyone at least knows in America, pretty much knows what the Bill of Rights is. It was created before the Constitution, pretty much just to establish what the citizens of the country had the right to. Now, one of the government documents that sort of precedes the Bill of Rights is the transcript of the 1789 Joint Resolution of Congress proposing the 12 amendments of the U.S. Constitution. So obviously not all of them passed, but this is how they are presented. Congress of the United States begun and held at the city of New York on Wednesday, the 4th of March, 1789. The conventions of a number of states having, at the time of their adopting the Constitution, expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its power that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added. So they're essentially just the first article, states that there should be one representative for every 30,000 until the number shall amount to 100. After that, which the proportion shall be so regulated by Congress. Now, this is the first article that they presented, and actually was never established as an article. The second article, no law varying the compensation for the services of senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of the representatives shall have intervened. Third article they presented, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and petition the government for a redress of grievances. What I like about transcripts and documents like this, like the Articles of Confederation, really give you a better insight about what the Constitution, a little bit more of what, like, the Constitution itself doesn't have a lot of, there are obviously amendments and things that aren't explained in detail, and I think the Articles of Confederation really help sort of give new light onto certain issues and their opinions of them when they were crafting the Constitution. And just like this, there may be in these articles they present a little bit more detail, a few more words per article that may help us determine what the intention was behind the current Constitution, which I think is really cool. Like, you have a document that everyone knows pretty well, but if you just go back, like, in history, you can see just a little bit more of what the intention was. The fourth article, well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of the free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Fifth article, no soldier shall, in time of peace, be quarantined in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in the manner to be prescribed by law. Obviously, you can recognize those last two very, obviously were adapted. Article the 6th, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, in particular describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Honestly, that's a great article. To be honest, like, thinking back of how long ago this was, and all the stipulations, all the rights they gave us through these, through their experiences with the British and what they didn't want to happen in the future. I mean, if it weren't for the British and their unreasonable insanity with, you know, seizing people's stuff for no reason, just because they could, you know, staying in people's houses, monitoring, all the things that they did that the Americans seemed so unreasonable, is what helped build what we have, what freedom we have today, which is great. Okay, or 7, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in the cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia when actual service in time of war or public danger. Nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any crime case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. 8th. Now, again, reiterating, this is not the Bill of Rights. This is what they presented in Congress to be the Bill of Rights. And there are 12 amendments here originally. Let's see. 8th. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right of a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed by the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witness against him, to have compulsory process of obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of the counsel for his defense. 9. In suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Article 10. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishment inflicted. 11. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed or denied to disparage others retained by the people. 12. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Okay, so that's a good one to, obviously it's the last one, it's the 12th one. A lot of people just... This is what bothers me about politics sometimes. A lot of people are putting politicians on pedestals. A lot of people think that they're the governing bodies, and they're not. The president serves the people. Our representatives are literally our representatives. Congress, the House of Representatives, the Senate, all represent the people of the United States. They are just vessels for which they can... I mean, obviously, the whole population of each state can't go into the Senate or the whole Congress building and argue what we want our rules or our laws to be or whatever. So we have representatives that go for us. And I think that's important to remember. A lot of people do know that, obviously, but a lot of people forget that we're the ones in charge. And it's what we as a collective want is what is most important. And yes, we are relying on those who we elect to make the right judgment calls for our own desires. So if the majority of a state votes for a certain person, then the majority can trust that person to make the decisions that the majority would want. Okay, so during that session where that was presented, Frederick Augustus Muhlenberg was Speaker of the House of Representatives, John Adams, Vice President, John Beckley, Clerk of the House of Representatives, and Sam Otis, Secretary of State. Hold on one second. Okay, now let's go to the actual Bill of Rights that was ratified. The following text is a transcription of the first 10 amendments to the Constitution in their original form. These amendments were ratified December 15, 1791, in what is known as the Bill of Rights. Okay, Amendment 1, it talks about establishing religion, is actually what was presented in the Congress as Article 3. So Article 3 jumped up to Amendment 1. Amendment 2 was about the militia. And that was the fifth article, presented as the fifth, and it made it as the second. Amendment 3... Oh, no, wait. It's Amendment 3 is Article 5. So it was presented as Article 5, made it as Article 3. Amendment 2 is the right to bear arms, and that was the fourth article, presented as the fourth article, but it became the second because clearly they felt that was very important. Amendment 4 in the Bill of Rights actually it was presented as Article 6. No, Amendment 5 was presented as Article 6. No, I'm sorry. Amendment 4 in the Bill of Rights was presented as Article 6 in Congress. Amendment 5. Oh, okay. Amendment 5 was presented as Article 7. Amendment 6 was presented as the 8th article. Amendment 7 was presented as the 9th article. Amendment 8 about excessive bail would be presented as the 10th article. Amendment 9 is Article 11, was presented as Article 11. Amendment 10 is, of course, the 12th, presented as the 12th. Essentially, you cut out the first two and then fill the other spaces up there. Okay, so that's the Bill of Rights right there. Let's go and discuss Amendment number 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, abridging the freedom of speech or the press, the right of people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Now, everyone's just refers to this as a freedom of speech, freedom of press, you know, whatever. But I don't think people realize how important this amendment was. I mean, in a time, even not far off, that, you know, colonists were sent over from England to the United States because they weren't allowed to practice the religion that they wanted to. Now, personally, I didn't think it was a great religion to begin with, but that's none of my business. Anyone should be able to practice the religion of their choice. And now that seems such a, like, obviously moment, like, no kidding scenario, because for the most part, people can do what they want. But people don't really think about back then that you couldn't just, you didn't have that freedom. So I think it's important that they weren't subjected to the beliefs that were pressed upon them. And they didn't just, you know, pass the torch. We were suppressed, so we're going to follow the rules and suppress everyone before us. And I think that takes a lot of intelligence and foresight to understand that the oppression they were subjected to is not how the world should be. So, Canada... And another important thing is they understood that you can't create a government that is free of criticism. And I think a lot of dictators feel like if they can arrest people for criticizing the government, then it'll keep them in power longer. And that's not necessarily the case. I think that the free exercise of grievances and speech and the right to change the government or establish what they don't like about the government is what creates a government that stays in power and can adapt to the world that changes constantly. It can adapt to technology, it can adapt to sudden changes in people's, you know, opinions of things. Like, not that long ago, no one wanted to, you know, agree that gay marriage should be allowed, and now everyone's like, oh my gosh, if you say that gay marriage isn't allowed, that's like, you're awful. But like, when Obama was running for president, that wasn't like commonplace back then, and it wasn't that long ago, but the tides change for the better typically, and now, along with that, we should have a government that sort of like can accommodate that situation. Also, back to the gay marriage thing. Politicians agreed or disagreed with certain issues based on the popular opinion. So, I don't think anyone who said they were anti-gay marriage back then and who isn't anti now, they've learned and they've ebbed and flowed with the popular opinion. And I think that's important. Should gay marriage be legal and should it have been all this time? Yes. But I also believe that marriage shouldn't be a governmental thing anyway. So, I mean, it's just a whole thing, in my opinion. The government shouldn't be involved in any marriage, so they shouldn't be making decisions on gay marriage. They shouldn't be making decisions on straight marriages. I mean, you do your thing, and that's all, and whatever. Do what you want. The right to peaceably protest and assemble, very important, though. The assembling of people in large groups tends to draw out violence anyway, but sometimes I'm not sure whether it is caused, who it's caused by a lot of the times. I mean, in a situation where you're trying to petition or fight for things for the government to change that affect your very core, that affect your life daily, it's hard not to get passionate about something like that. And of course, I think that it's important to remember that how important the government is for our daily lives. And I think there should be more leeway when it comes to, I don't know, more understanding when people are protesting and assembling to try to get what they want out of the government. Because, I mean, if you see someone suffering, of course they're going to be so passionate about wanting to be able to change that. So, I mean, it's great that we have that in the Constitution, that peaceably protesting is allowed and you are allowed to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Now, this interesting part, the way it's separated, there is a semicolon, and it says, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble, comma, and to petition the government of a redress of grievances. So, does that mean that the petition for the government for redress of grievances, does that mean it has to be done peaceably? I believe so, but that's something you could argue, because I mean, it's not super apparent in the text, and maybe some people have a hard time understanding that, but I'm going to assume that that's it because of the semicolon. I'm going to go ahead and agree that in order to petition the government for redress of grievances, you have to do it peacefully, which would make sense. Because the country, the amendments, the whole base and foundation of our country is based on logical, clear thinking. I mean, obviously, times have changed. There are some things they did back then that were abhorrent now. But they were very progressive at the time. And that's not an excuse for a lot of the atrocities. But also, every country has horrible, horrible atrocities that we just have to move on from at this point. Because there are things that are good that happened. Like, the fact that they did create the Constitution in this such a freeing, most of it is very, liberating for most people. I mean, obviously we had to amend it for black people, women, but the basis of the Constitution, once applied to everyone, literally everyone, not just men, is actually really great. Okay, so we're gonna hop on to Amendment Number 2. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Okay, so people argue about this all the time, obviously. They always talk about how back then bearing arms is important, because they had like muskets and rifles and stuff like that, but now you can get AR-15s and all that stuff, and that they thought that the founding fathers wouldn't have agreed with that extent of weaponry. But I don't know if that's true, because they had a lot of foresight. And was a cannon something you could bear? Are you allowed to keep a cannon? You're allowed to keep a well-regulated militia, so I'm assuming that means you could have cannons, which is something that was a thing back then. So, I mean, if it's necessary for the security of the free state, our government's military has upgraded. So I feel like the whole point of this is to match the government's technology. So a well-regulated militia, just so like Britain, if the British were fighting us with muskets and cannons and we had, a bow and arrow and a knife, like, that wouldn't work. So I feel like the upgrade in military equipment, like the AR-15 or bigger guns, is necessary in order to keep this amendment accurate. The whole point of bearing arms is to protect yourself. You cannot protect yourself from a modern army. And if the whole point was, if the British if the British government taking over the houses and whatever of the American people, well, they weren't even American yet, that scenario happened now, the whole point of that is that you'd be able to easily protect yourself on a sort of equal playing field if the freaking army came after you. So I wholeheartedly believe that semi-automatic weapons, any fucking gun, is covered under that amendment. Now, do I agree that it's super necessary because our government has advanced and we don't really have the threat of our army coming after citizens? No, of course we don't have that threat. But, I mean, we didn't know we were going to have it to begin with when the British, were around. And who knows, maybe some country will attack our country and having those weapons will be good. But that amendment, that Second Amendment, is preventing from being caught off guard when the worst possible scenario happens. And that allows you to have any gun. No matter how dangerous, that is what it says. Okay, so Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their possessions, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by the oath of affirmation and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Okay, so that's essentially, you know, when you watch CSI or Law and Order, you see that you have to have a warrant. Everyone who watches TV knows about warrants and that you have to have a probable reason to get a warrant to search someone's house. And I think that's another very important amendment that they didn't realize. I mean, they obviously created this amendment because of what they had been through with the British. British soldiers would come into people's houses and they would just tear through things, take things under the name of the king or the, you know, the general, whatever, because that was their right. They had the right to do that because it was their government and the king had all, you know, all powerful ruling, whatever. And they didn't even get any representation in the government. So I think that amendment is important, and it shows even now, because it's important now, because you see so many scenarios where bad things, it could have gone back to that. Different sections of time where you see that amendment hadn't been there, that we would have sort of reverted back to, you know, the British seizure of our possessions. In different scenarios from different people, different, you know, throughout history since then. So I think it's very important, and it's important that I think for the most part, the rules about the warrants and the laws and the judges having to approve them, most people take pretty seriously, and I think that's important. You shouldn't have to worry about your things being seized with no reason. That's just a security that goes along with freedom of speech and freedom of living your freaking life. Okay, amendment number 5, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service or time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense twice and be put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or the pursuit of happiness. It's life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. So, let's start at the back of this. Another thing, influence from the British. Our government cannot take a citizen's land. And I just want to say that the Founding Fathers were great in this sense, because a lot of times when you are not in power and there is a power governing above you, they do things like, you know, take your money, your property, all this stuff, and obviously you hate it. You don't like being in that position. But then when you get into the position where you are the leader, you are in charge, a lot of people keep those rules in place so then they can benefit from those rules that they hated before. They can, you know, seize whatever they want. So then they benefit from the things they hated. Well, here the Founding Fathers didn't do that. They could have easily been selfish. They could have easily gone and then created this great government and then mirrored the British government by using their positions to become wealthier, become, you know, more powerful. But they didn't. They created a world that they wanted to live in as citizens if they didn't have power, if they weren't in the government. And I think that's commendable. Was it perfect? Of course not. But I think the construction of the government brick by brick was very well done. So you can't just steal people's property. You can't screw someone over in a trial. So, you can't just grab someone and say they're guilty. You have to have evidence. No double jeopardy. Everyone's heard of that. Movie stuff, obviously. You can't be a witness against yourself. And you can't lose your rights as an American citizen without due process. And that's very important, because I can see in those lines, the underlying text, so much suffering of people just losing their rights for with no due process. And that's absolute torture. That's so frustrating. Okay, amendment number 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witness against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Now, this sort of governing, obviously this is not the first time this sort of fair governing has been seen, I'm assuming. I don't know about any other countries' governments, beginning governments, in that much detail, but this is so amazing. There are so many places where if the government thinks you're guilty, or if a police officer thinks you're guilty, then you're guilty. There's no evidence presented, or if there is, it's ignored. I mean, there are worse scenarios here, and obviously the Founding Fathers had seen that. They've clearly experienced the hardships and the aggravation of accusations without probable, you know, impartial scenarios where they can really flush out the evidence and really look at it without any bias. And that is something that, again, like I keep saying, there is a lot of foresight when creating this, because it's timeless. These topics, these amendments are timeless. They cover issues that we are still dealing with and that we will in 1,000 years. So obviously a speedy trial, public trial, those are important because, you know, if someone thinks someone's guilty, but they're trying to, you know, they could keep them locked up without any action on the trial, that's because they want them to be imprisoned. That's just horrible, and no one deserves that. Public trial, it's important to have a public trial because then, you're held accountable. The government's held accountable, the lawyers are held accountable, the person that's, you know, on trial was held accountable. And I think it's great that people still take having impartial juries so seriously. Like, even with the case of Ghislaine Maxwell, they found out that one of the jurors had some sexual trafficking, like, something happened in her life that made her sympathetic towards the victim of the victim, so obviously she's anti-Ghislaine Maxwell, who isn't, but because of that experience, they sort of put in question whether she was able to be, impartial, and I think that it's important that even though everyone hates Ghislaine Maxwell, everyone thinks she's guilty, no one wants to see her free, I think it's important that the government still set aside time to go and look into that particular jury member. Did I say witness? I meant jury member earlier. To make sure that this case was not compromised. And they ruled that it wasn't. But even in a case like that, even if it's going against how you believe it should go, it's important to follow the rules. And it's important that, I mean, I think it's great that people still take it seriously because it's important for everyone. Not that I'm sticking up for Ghislaine because she's a fucking monster. But I think it's great to see that the government still takes procedures seriously no matter how they feel about the person who didn't or did commit the crime. And that gives hope for anyone who's in being indicted or something who is innocent, because they will get the fair shake, hopefully. I'm very hopeful, because there are so many people that were imprisoned on terrible, for minuscule things, and they shouldn't have been. And yes, we are still trying to work on it. No, I don't think people should have gone to jail for marijuana. Yes, is it a racist system? Of course it is. We're getting better. Is it good enough? Of course not. But I can't, based off of who we have been as a country in the past, it's a billion times better. Is it good enough for today's standards? No, not at all. But I'm saying, as a basis of government rules, in an ideal society, these rules are good. Now, whether the people enacting them are not flawed or not, of course they're flawed. So that's where the discrepancies come in, where black people don't have, white people have an easier time than black people when it comes to police, of course. That's just common knowledge. Should it be that way? No. But it's going to be a long time before we can erase that racism that's built into people's heads that become police officers. I don't think that a lot of them intend to have those racial thoughts built into their head, but they just were. Some people are intentionally racist, of course. But I think a lot of people were brought up thinking that certain racist ideas were in fact factual, and they don't question them. So when they see a black person, their immediate instinct is to want to arrest them, say if they're an officer, or say, think, oh, they're doing something bad. But that's because that is institutionalized racism. They were brought up with that being pounded into their head. And it's going to take a while to get rid of it. And I think that we're making strides because it's common knowledge now. I mean, when I was younger, I didn't know that. I didn't know a lot of this, and I think that it's common knowledge now, and it's gonna take a bit, but I think we're on the right path to things getting a little bit better. I know it's a struggle, and I'm not giving points to the government. It's not good. It's not good. People shouldn't be dying for no reason. But that's a whole nother topic we can get onto. But I just wanted anyone listening to know that I am praising these amendments, and no, I'm not saying that they're perfect or our founding fathers were perfect. And I think that disclaimer has to be put in here. But I'm talking about the text itself, not its execution or the flawed people that, you know, read these and enact them incorrectly or whatnot. Okay. Amendment number 7. In suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States that according to the rules of the common law. Okay, so $20. I'm going to look that up. $20 in 1798. Wait a minute. Oh, I was like, I looked at 17, I put 1798, and then I looked and it said the value now of $20 is $27, but that was 1797. Okay, so $20 now is equivalent to $625. Or $20 then is equivalent to $625 now. But I'm assuming people still go by the $20, which isn't that much of a difference. So anything, pretty much anything, where the value and controversy shall exceed $20. So yeah, you can go to court for anything above $20. Obviously anything lower than that is a waste of everyone's time. It's fair, but also it's fair to say, you know, as low as $20, because some people will say, well, it's only a certain amount, so why are you wasting your time? But the Constitution says you're allowed to. If you want to be petty as hell, that is your right to take someone to court over $20. Okay, so Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel or unusual punishments inflicted. Cruel and unusual punishments, I'm gonna say that, anyone put away to jail for 10 years for marijuana possession is gonna be, breaking this amendment right here. Amendment number 8, I think it's, but also the flaw in this is that excessive bail or excessive fines is opinion-based. There is no guide, there is no chart. So excessiveness is based on whether, I don't know, what the judge thinks, what, you know, the jury thinks. And that's hard to determine, because if you have a, race or gender bias in your brain that's built in there from birth, you're gonna think, oh, that if you're gonna punish someone for 10 years for marijuana possession and you, were raised to hate a certain, specific sort of person, then punishing them in a specific way that's, you wouldn't another race might not seem excessive to you if you're racist. So I think that excessive bail or excessive fines or cruel and unusual punishment is opinion-based, and therefore that amendment has kind of failed us. I think that we need to look back at this amendment more often. Do a lot of people know we have this amendment? I mean, should it be more popular? Should we use it more? Again, there's no definite measurement on what excessive means to a specific person. I think there should be maybe a guide where, you know, if you're caught with marijuana, it's your first, well, obviously it's legal now in most places, but like say caught with marijuana, first offense, this is your max sentence. There should be across the board sort of guide to how that would work, because otherwise, at least a cap to it. If you want to go under, if you want to punish them less, be my guest. But there should be a cap to certain laws. Obviously, like smaller laws, like marijuana possession, if it's your first offense, it should be like this, community service max this many hours, or jail time max this many months, or whatever. If it's your second offense, it'll raise the cap a little higher. I think there should be at least a guide for that, because so many people take that and take advantage of the system. Amendment 10. The power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. As I mentioned before, this is Amendment 10, and it's Amendment 12, and when they presented the amendments to the Congress. Very important to remember that the United States is ruled by the citizens, the common citizens, and represented by the politicians. The president serves us, the politicians serve us, the Senate serves us. Don't forget that. I'm going to end today's I'm just like all over the. I said we're gonna end a day's stream. That's because I stream on Twitch, and I'm super used to saying that. But we're gonna end today's podcast on that note, and don't forget, the government serves you. And we'll be back with the amendments 11 through 27 next time. Thanks for listening.